Believe in yourself, cause it starts with you, and then everyone else will believe you too. And if it looks like you're the only believer around, just keep on believing, don't put yourself down, just believe.
Our guest this week grew up in East Grand Rapids, Michigan, earned an undergraduate degree from Hope College, and a Doctor of Medicine degree from Wayne State University School of Medicine. Since 1991, he's been a board-certified orthopedic surgeon, specializing in conditions of the hip and knee and joint replacement surgery at Corewell Health William Bowman Hospital. And since 2019, he's been an orthopedic surgeon with the Michigan Orthopedic Surgeons. The epitome of a world-class surgeon with fantastic bedside manners. His name, Dr. Perry Green. And I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on 760 WJR. I'm Jack Rasula. This is Anything Is Possible. We're with Dr. Perry Green. Since 2019, he's been an orthopedic surgeon with Michigan Orthopedic Surgeons. He is the epitome of a world-class surgeon with fantastic bedside manners. Perry, a welcome. What an honor to have you.
Well, it's my privilege. Thank you for having me, Jack.
Can we start by you offering an opening prayer?
I'd be glad to. Dear Heavenly Father, I thank you for the chance to know Mr. Jack Rasula. Every time I'm with him, I want to be a better person. I want to be a stronger Christian. I look forward every day for the guidance from my Father above to help me in each of my daily endeavors. I pray for all my patients, my family, and wish that we can all become closer to you and understand your will. Amen.
Thank you. Let's go back to East Grand Rapids, Michigan. Your childhood, your mom and your dad, please.
Well, my dad was an orthopedic surgeon at Blodgett Hospital in East Grand Rapids. He met my mom, who was a nurse anesthetist, and at that time, they were still using ether for anesthesia. I was probably destined to be an orthopedic surgeon since a young age. I was fascinated with anatomy, you know, always stating that anatomy is the one constant in medicine, but loved medicine and anatomy since I was a young buck. Worked with my dad's group in their office. I was a cast technician in high school and worked in the operating room all through high school and college, and just loved the operating room. Tried to be different kinds of surgeons, but ultimately, I knew I liked hip and knee replacement to solve what arthritis did to people.
What's the biggest thing, doctor, you learned from mom? And what's the biggest thing you learned from dad?
You know, I think the one thing I share with some of my patients is that when I graduated from medical school, my mom gave me a book that said, everything you need to know to be a doctor you learned in kindergarten. And it's things like manners and sharing and getting along. My mom is a quiet person. She's still alive. She's 94. But I think she taught me patience and humility. My dad, not so patient, but very humble man, but one of those people that graduated first in his medical school class. He absolutely loved the science of medicine. I think he could have been any physician. He had a residency in pediatrics at Harvard, but when he got drafted in the war in Korea, he came back and wanted to do orthopedics because of what he saw during the war. I tried to be a peripheral vascular surgeon, but always gravitated back to orthopedics.
Speaking of residency, talk about your residency.
So I did my residency at back then it was William Beaumont Royal Oak, under an orthopedic surgeon that was famous for joint replacement, Dr. Stanko Stanislavovic. And I was fortunate to work with him for about 5 years before I went off to fellowship, where I traveled all over the country.
You had a couple of fellowships at some pretty famous spots.
I really did. I mean, it was unfortunate that he became ill during my sixth year, and then he helped place me at different places. I was off to Mayo in Rochester, Minnesota, spent time with Dr. Harris in Boston at Harvard. Was in Philadelphia with Dr. Dick Rothman, was out in Phoenix with Dr. Tony Headley, and then some local surgeons here at DMC.
All right. Talk about the life in residency today, Doctor?
Well, residency today, it is a little different. I mean, there's back when I was a resident, we had two residents per year. Now we have, I think we currently have six at Beaumont Royal Oak. But it's different. Back then, you know, it was all paper charts, no electronic anything, no cell phones. I think the residents today are the highest group of graduating medical students tend to be in programs such as ophthalmology and orthopedics, and we're constantly kept on our toes as older surgeons by these young, extremely bright future doctors.
You mentioned the anatomy. Tell us about the miracle we know as the human body.
Well, we still haven't learned everything, that's for sure. You know, even in college, I helped do all the anatomy dissections for the nursing schools and did the pro sections during the summers at Wayne State for the anatomy classes, and just absolutely loved it. So we do, you know, quite often during the training of our current residents, we call it cadaver week, but we do weeks where there's anatomy dissections, we do procedures, we do new innovative work with robots on different aspects of what we do. But anatomy is just, it's the greatest part of what I get to do every day.
You're talking to lay people now.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us about knees and hips.
Well, I mean, mostly what I deal with is arthritis. You know, there's obviously trauma that goes with that. But, you know, you have to remember the joint replacement really didn't exist 60 years ago. You know, you think about how many millions of total hips, total knees, total shoulders that are performed every year now. But 60, 70 years ago, it was in its infancy. We were trying to figure out metals and plastics and glues. And, you know, we have people that, many of the healthy people go home the same day that we do their hip or knee replacement. They don't stay in the hospital, whereas 30 years ago, we'd keep them in the hospital for usually about a week. So it's been a miracle.
We're talking to Dr. Perry Green. We just heard about what it was like 60 years ago. When we come back, we're going to ask him what it was like 35 years ago, 1991, when he became an orthopedic surgeon. And I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on 760 WJR. Welcome back to Anything Is Possible. I'm Jack Rasula. We're with Dr. Perry Green. Since 1991, 35 years, Perry. He's been a board-certified orthopedic surgeon specializing in conditions of the hip and knee and joint replacement surgery at Corwell Health, William Beaumont Hospital. Let's go back 35 years. Talk about surgery then.
Well, that was a long time ago. I was starting practice in a local group of orthopedic surgeons. The things that I had been doing for 5 or 6 years, it seemed to be routine. Now it was on my shoulders. You know, the buck stops here. I started doing pretty much solely hip and knee replacements and quite a bit of trauma. At Royal Oak, the Beaumont campus, there really were no trauma surgeons at that time. So I did a lot of trauma at that time along with my total joint replacements. But, you know, a hip and knee replacement in the 1990s, you know, would take 2 to 3 hours. Some of the revision complex cases would take 8 to 10 hours. Now, in 2026, you know, most routine hip and knee replacements take under an hour. The patients are home before I finish the next surgery for the healthy people. As I get older now, and I get more gray hair, I attract a lot more complicated redo type revision surgeries for people that have had injuries or their previous joint replacements have worn out or had trouble. So I do a lot of complex cases that I really enjoy. It's like a puzzle.
What misconceptions do patients commonly have about orthopedic surgery?
Well, Dr. Google has let everybody become an expert. the most important thing of what I do is trying to I essentially get to know the patient, understand their goals, their desires, their misconceptions. You know, joint replacement, as common as it may seem today, it's still a very complicated surgery from the standpoint that, you know, patients are at risk. You know, they're at risk to their life and their limb. Nothing bad happens very often, but when it's bad, it's quite serious. I think they need to understand, you know, what we do. I try to show them what the parts look like. I try to help them understand what the experience is going to look like. And I'm always kind of disappointed when the patient says to me, "You really took the time to explain that to me, and nobody had before." You know, I hope and I pray that medicine will continue to have patience with the patient. You know, help them understand, help allay their fears, help them understand, you know, where their expectations may be aligned or misaligned.
Everybody that's ever met Dr. Perry Green says, a humble man. We just lost Lou Holtz a week ago. A lot of great lines. Mm-hmm. One was, "Don't tell me how much you know until you show me how much you care." Perry, your bedside manners are legendary. Can you teach that to young surgeons?
Well, you're very kind, Jack. I appreciate those kind words. I hope you can teach empathy. I sometimes get disappointed that that's probably the hardest thing we can instill in an orthopedic resident in our program. They come out from medical school as some of the smartest, brightest young people. They have research curricula vitae that are outstanding, but many of them have trouble talking to a live patient. You know, and I think empathy is actually harder to teach than the surgical procedure. I think my mantra has been that I'm only as good as the next patient I take care of. I appreciate your accolades, but, you know, this is the human body and, you know, the things that happen to patients. I mean, many things can happen in my age group of patients. Many of my patients are in their 70s, 80s, and 90s. But again, I stand by the concept that I'm only as good as the next patient I take care of.
What are the most important factors that influence successful recovery after surgery?
Well, that's a tough one. I would probably say that to some degree, probably the patient's motivation. You know, the patients that come in that have a true desire to recover physically and emotionally are the ones that are going to recover the quickest and probably to the fullest extent.
How do you decide, doctor, when surgery is not the right answer?
Yeah. Well, again, you have to really know the patient, understand, you know, what is their disease process? Does it fit with what I see and how I've examined the patients? You know, for example, a lot of the hip replacement patients can come in and they have back-related symptoms. They have hip and groin and thigh and knee-related symptoms. And I have to make sure that the whole picture fits with me being able to help them with a hip replacement. Sometimes they need their back attended to. Sometimes they have other issues that need to be attended to. Sometimes they're in their later stages of life and their heart is too weak or, you know, too fragile to undergo an extensive joint replacement. And to be able to tell patients at that stage that they really shouldn't have surgery is probably one of the tougher things I do.
When we had breakfast a month or so ago, you said, "Jack, I now am in the third generation of patients. And Jack, I'm seeing patients 85 to 90 years old."
My oldest surgical patient was a delightful lady that was 107. She had fallen and broken her hip, and she had still been playing golf until she was 97. And just a delight of a patient, and she did well. But, you know, we have lots of very vital patients that are in their late 80s, 90s. I had a patient yesterday going to Italy at the age of 91 with his wife, and she's younger. She's only 88.
Another couple of the Lou Holtz lines were, "When you're my age, you don't buy green bananas. And at my age, the birthday candles cost more than the cake."
That's
pretty
good.
Unbelievable. Okay, when we come back, we're going to ask Dr. Perry Green about Michigan orthopedic surgeons. And I'm Jack Krasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on 760 WJR. This is Anything Is Possible. I'm your host, Jack Krasula. We're with Dr. Perry Green. If you want to learn more, miorthosurgeons.com. miorthosurgeons.com. Since 2019, you've been an orthopedic surgeon with Michigan Orthopedic Surgeons.
Correct.
Please.
Actually, my first group in 1991, I joined Oakland Orthopedic Surgeons. At that time, it was a group of, we were probably six or seven surgeons, all of them my mentors. And then as the local groups in the region around Royal Oak Beaumont campus at Woodward and 13 Mile, we got all the orthopedic groups together and formed what is now Michigan Orthopedic Surgeons. And I think it started as five groups that combined all the real estate, all the surgeons, and we felt we could definitely become a more engulfing group where we had all the specialties with us, from spine surgery to pediatrics to trauma and all of that. We could pool our resources. We all work together anyways. We're all friends. And now we're this group of some 53, maybe 55 surgeons, and I don't even know how many offices we have, probably 9 or 10. I'm the old dog, so I stay at one office on Woodward Avenue, just south of the Royal Oak campus of Corwell. But we have surgical centers, we have physical therapy facilities. With one phone call, I can talk to a therapist that I specifically want to work with a certain patient. But it's really been a wonderful thing. It's hard to get surgeons to agree on anything. We can't even agree on the color of carpet in our office. But to the attributes of Paul Fortin and Jad Khalil, our senior leadership, they've kept us together. And now I think we're a very well-organized entity that can negotiate with insurance companies and hospitals to first and foremost provide better care, but also really economically better care. And that's just been really eye-opening to watch that evolve over the last 6-7 years.
If you want to learn more, miorthosurgeons.com. Okay, you talked about 58 surgeons. Dr. Perry Green, what do all great surgeons have in common?
Wow. I would probably say dedication. You know, I think you'll find that most of us truly love what we do. And if the medical students listening don't love what medicine is and they're doing it for other reasons, you're in the wrong business. You know, it's not a 9-to-5 job, and it shouldn't be. It's a job of communication, you know, the knowledge of what medicine is, both surgically for me as well as on the medical side. I don't just take care of hips and knees. I truly try to take care of the whole person in front of me. I get patients that call me all the time, you know, who do I see for, you know, spine surgery, or who's the best ophthalmologist or foot doctor? And, you know, I have to really care for the whole patient. And it sounds funny, but that's how I look at it. I think dedication is your answer.
We have a mutual friend, the late great Dr. Robert Poole, legendary. Mm-hmm. And he told me once, he said, Jack, all great surgeons, to them, it's a calling. What did he mean by that?
I had a chance to work with Dr. Poole. He was a very well-known plastic surgeon who really specialized in facial deformities, cleft lip, cleft palate. He would travel all over the world. Patients would come from all over the world to us. And he didn't know me from Adam when I was an orthopedic resident. But just the way he talked to people that came from all walks of life, and he treated everybody the same, but he absolutely described his work as a calling and felt that he had a God-given gift. I started at Hope College. I was a scared little incoming freshman, sure I'd never make it through college. You know, I wanted to be a surgeon ever since I was little. But on the front door of the science building at Hope College, it was called the Peel Center, and there was some person named Norman Vincent Peel. And I didn't know who he was, so back then we didn't have Google. I had to look him up in the library. And then next thing I know, I'm reading his book, The Power of Positive Thinking. And my kids probably are sick of hearing this, but my mantra through college was affirmative prayers relieve powers by which positive results are accomplished. And I think that helped me get through college and medical school, just that faith that I thought I was called to do this.
That Robert Poole, Dr. Robert Poole, would go a couple times to the Brazilian jungles with a team of like 15 people for a couple of weeks. I think Peter Minestrelli and his wife put the money toward that each time. And people would walk and row for days to see the man.
Yeah. My second son, Ryan, he was a pediatric resident. He now is a pediatric cardiologist, but he and his wife have been to Africa several times performing medicine for essentially pediatric groups. And he would come home so frustrated. He says, "Dad, I think we just made a drip in the bucket." They would have lines of people hundreds of yards long that just did, like you said, they walked miles and miles just to come get care for their children. And he would provide the care, but he said, "Dad, I don't think I did enough."
Okay, we've talked a lot about surgeons. Now let's talk about the really important people, our nurses.
Oh, absolutely no question. First off, I hope and pray that more people will go into nursing. We desperately need nurses. But I've had a chance to work with some of the best nurses ever. You know, it's we're only as good as the team around us. And I have nurses in my office. I have nurses at the hospital. I have nurses in the operating room. And as a physician, and me specifically as a surgeon, we could not exist without our nurses. And I would also include in that group accolades to all the therapists that we work with, physical therapists, occupational therapists, and certainly other kinds of therapists, including speech and everything. In my little world, it's mostly physical and occupational therapists. But again, I am only as good as the people that surround me.
Perry, your 94-year-old mom is going to listen to the show. We better talk about anesthetist, or she's it's got to be a bad day for the son, Perry, anesthetist.
Yeah. So she was an anesthetist, which nowadays would be called a CRNA, Certified Registered Nurse Anesthetist. I can't even say it. She trained in Grand Rapids through the Blodgett Nursing Program, trained at Cook County in Chicago. But her forte was really OB-GYN back in the day, where they literally used ether. They dripped ether for the anesthetic for the deliveries of babies. So
we're talking to Dr. Perry Green. For some of the older listeners, you might remember Robert Young from 69 to 76, Dr. Marcus Welby, MD. That's Perry Green. He's even got the looks for Dr. Welby. And I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on 760 WJR.
You've been listening to your inspirational fireside chat, Anything Is Possible, for nearly 20 years.
This is Anything Is Possible, and I'm Jack Rasula.
But what has Jack been up to lately? Search at AIP Speaker Series and find out. Jack has interviewed thousands of historical voices, some of whom have offered him their philosophy of life, like Tom Izzo.
And Tom writes, "Work hard, persistence always wins out, discipline is the highest form of love, stay humble."
The great Ernie Harwell.
"My aim is to do justice, love mercy, and walk humbly with God."
And the voices of our generation.
"I am reassured continuously that His unfathomable love and mercy are the greatest gifts of my life, and my constant source of strength, reassurance, and guidance. His Holiness, Pope Francis."
At AIP Speakers Series is the YouTube channel where all of these jewels can be heard, including some of Anything Is Possible's greatest guests.
And we're with Mitch Albom.
The Little Liar is really a book about truth and lies and the price we pay when we lie.
This is Anything Is Possible, and with Tom Watson.
My father loved to play with the pros at the club. Developed a very quick friendship with Stan and played some golf with him. And then he would ask me to play golf with him and Stan.
Our guest this week was born with a rare disorder characterized by the absence of arms and legs. His name, Nick Vujicic.
Something that every human being actually deals with, Jack. It's the choice of continuing to believe or giving up.
And recordings of the AIP Speaker Series events at St. John's Resort. Go to YouTube and search at AIP Speaker Series. It's free. And remember,
anything is possible.
Spohom. I'm Jack Rasula. This is Anything is Possible. We're talking to Dr. Perry Green, the epitome of a world-class surgeon with fantastic bedside manners. If you want to learn more, www.miorthosurgeonswithans.com. When we had that breakfast, I said, Doctor, do miracles still happen today? And you shot back, Jack, I see them every day.
Absolutely. There's no question. I think if you followed me around for a day, you wouldn't be an atheist. You know, what I get to see, the ability of the human body to survive trauma, to undergo surgery and heal. And I'm still a little bit amazed that what I do for people surgically as a hip and knee replacement doctor, you know, that afternoon, they're literally walking out the door to get in their car to go home. You know, we see them return to their activities that they miss, like golf and tennis and walking and playing with the grandkids and, you know, aggressive things, you know, skiing and all sorts of endeavors. But I really do get to see miracles every day. When I was a high school student, my dad brought me into a room of he was a merchant marine sailor, and he had a giant piece of bone in his knee. It's called a loose body. And he'd had trauma, and this little piece of bone had developed, and it was the size of a golf ball in his knee. And he didn't have surgery at that time, but he went away for a few months on one of his merchant marine trips and came back. And he told me that a voodoo doctor had taken it out with his hands. And we got x-rays, and it was gone. And where it went and how it got taken out, to this day, I have no clue. But maybe that's a miracle. But I stand fast with every day I get to see people healing and happy, and it's a very good field. I mean, most people like us. You know, if you go to cancer doctor and spine doctor and stuff, maybe the results aren't always so successful. But I really enjoy my patients. I get to see their ability to return to their lifestyle so many times.
For most of us, God is the spare tire of our life. We hear the word, I'm leaving you, you're fired, you have cancer. We jump in the trunk, we get that tire out, and we start cutting deals with the Lord. I'll quit doing this, I'll start doing this. And then that disaster subsides, the tire's back in the trunk. Perry, for you, the Lord is the steering wheel of your life.
He is. I hope he takes more control of my life and that I let him take control of it. Every morning when I open my briefcase, I have one of those little postcards where there's a picture of an operating table with a couple surgeons around it, and there's this glowing figure of Jesus with his hand on my shoulder. At least that's who I think it is. And I've definitely had the experiences where maybe a non-Christian wouldn't quite understand this, but I've definitely felt this feeling, this force, this guidance that has helped me out of some difficult situations in the operating room on complex cases. And to me, that's the miracle that I perceive every day.
Another thing that Dr. Robert Poole said to me once was, Jack, we cut, but God heals.
No question. I've seen things that should have never healed, you know, complex trauma cases, infections, and the ability for divine intervention to heal the human body is amazing.
Okay, speaking of seeing things, robotic surgery.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's amazing what the robots have done from, you know, what you would consider simple things like people that have hernias. They get their hernia fixed with the robot. They go home in an hour. A colleague of mine is a thoracic surgeon. He can take your lung out with the robot in a couple little portal holes as opposed to opening your entire chest. In the world of orthopedics, we're definitely still evolving, and all of medicine truly is, but now there's different forms of robots that can assist us with hip and knee replacements, spine surgery, shoulder replacements, limb lengthening, you name it. So it's really technology that's helping us.
AI.
AI is, you know, I feel like a teenager with a new toy because I can go into AI and I can tell them, give me the best 5 articles on a certain topic. And within seconds, I have more information in front of me than I could get in a month in, you know, 2010 after I submitted my request at the library with piles of books that I had to go through. AI is going to really help medicine a lot.
Let's go forward 5 years. 2030. What will surgery be like in 5 years?
Well, I still have the hope in my world that we have actually helped to treat and prevent the progression of arthritis to the point that maybe we don't need to do joint replacements. That would be a great thing if we could help understand arthritis, prevent what it does to people, regenerate cartilage, heal joints, prevent people with spine difficulties from needing spine surgery. I mean, I think that would be my biggest desire. Surgically, I think most people, when you really get down to it and you get to know them, most people are afraid of the pain that goes with surgery. And even in the last 6 months, even a year, we've made such great strides with helping manage pain after surgery. That's probably the biggest advance I've seen in the last 10 years. But, you know, helping the patient recover quicker with less pain, faster recovery, you know, better expectations for what their future is going to look like.
If you want to learn more, www.miorthosurgeonswithans.com. God has really blessed you, Perry Green.
No question.
And the day that you met Artis was a blessing.
She
for you, and once in a while she would say, even for her.
This will sound completely off track, but she told her parents she was going to marry me before we had our first date. But she is the best thing that's ever happened to me by far. She survived medical school with me. We got married after my first year of medical school. And I refer to her as Dr. Artis because she has survived all of residency and my hours of what I do. And she's given me such great latitude to pursue my career. She essentially raised our 4 kids, and she is one of the strongest Christians I've ever met. She's had a number of significant health challenges for many years, and without her faith, I'm not sure how she would still be here. But she is definitely the neck that turns the head. She is the Christian backbone of our family, and she is constantly on our kids to be better Christians.
Speaking of your 4 kids, you got a daughter named Allison. That's very special.
No question. Allison, I think personality-wise, she's probably a little bit like me. She's on the quieter side. But her passion ever since she went to college has been for essentially young adults with special needs. And she currently owns and operates a school in Berkeley, Michigan called Our Neighborhood Academy. And it's all filled with young adults from ages 16 up to 40 that have cognitive needs, essentially special needs. Many of them are through the local school districts that come. She has social events. She helps them learn job skills. And, you know, it's something you wouldn't understand unless you watched her every day. But her passion for helping these young people is amazing.
So many of our young people are afraid, uncertain. What would you say to them?
Well, I was one of those people. All through high school and college, I was the one sitting in the back of the room, didn't want to talk. And I would say, really, have confidence in who you are, what you know. You know, don't be afraid to talk to the people you don't know. I swear my wife makes friends in elevators. You know, she talks to anybody. She talks to people in grocery store lines, and she's taught me to be a better communicator. Not that I'm a good communicator, but better.
Being humble is not thinking less of yourself. It's thinking less about yourself. And one thing that everybody who's ever met Perry Green says is, there's Mr. Humble. How do I learn to be humble?
Well, I think you have to, and I appreciate these comments, Jack, but I hope I'm as humble as you think I am. But I think you have to understand where everything comes from. You know, I truly believe that I've had a unique opportunity to do what I do, something I absolutely love doing, and I get to do that every day. But it's knowing that everything I do is a gift from above.
As our time winds down together, can you lead us in a closing prayer?
Dear Lord, help us to all understand where all of our gifts come. Help us to understand your role in our life. Help us be open in the idea that you truly are the driver of our life. Help us to understand where you want us to go, how you want us to be, and how we can lead the next generation in understanding these gifts.
And Heavenly Father, thank you for Dr. Perry Green. Keep up the great, great work.
Thank you, Jack.
Please join us next week. Until then, I'm Jack Rasula. Thanks for listening, and make it a great week, because with God, anything is possible. Spoken.